Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. We're so happy that you joined us once again on KMUN or KMUN.org or Apple or Spotify, any of your favorite podcast locations.
I'm beginning to think maybe you're on the payroll of one of those.
Ooh,
because you say that every time. You give the whole litany.
On the payroll of public radio.
Well, no, I was thinking more like the Apple or Spotify or something like that.
Oh, I wish I was on the payroll for one of them, but no, I'm not.
You're one of those influencers.
I am. There we go. We just want to increase our podcast listeners. And one way of doing that is bringing in great guests. We have a good guest here today, yes. Darren Gooch with Sunset Empire Parks and Rec. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So I'm going to correct her offhanded insult before you storm out of the studio angry. You said part of what we do is have great guests. We've got a good guest here.
Oh, yes.
I didn't make great.
Yes.
I was going to say, or maybe she just...
We have one of those great guests here.
Maybe you come in as good, and then as soon as you complete the 30 minutes, then she deems you great, perhaps.
I leave great.
So all of you listeners, you just have to stay tuned to figure out which one it is.
Well, I'm already predicting so that, at least maybe you'll stay for me, that I think you're going to be a great guest.
Well, I appreciate that, Mac.
Spoken like a true executive director here. Yes.
All right. Shall we get right to it?
Let's do it.
We got nothing to pluck. I mean, there's tons of things. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be a crazy rest of April, May, June, July, and August for the Historical Society and the Historia Column.
Yep. Moms call May mayhem.
Yeah. I can agree.
The month of mayhem. I mean, it's just like, let's pack in all of the last minute things.
Yes, it's crazy. So, and I don't even have that much to stay in history. So I hope you have a lot of great stories to share with us.
No pressure. No pressure, Darren.
I could talk forever.
Excellent. So there's just a few. Apparently nothing happened on tomorrow, April 20th. Very little. Apparently history just kind of takes the day off, I guess.
There's some things.
All right. But the highlights that jumped out at me, April 20th, as always, icebreakers, things to talk about at work or around the dinner table or over your breakfast muffins. April 20th, 1861, Robert E. Lee resigns from the U.S. Army after Virginia secedes from the Union. Colonel Robert E. Lee resigns from the U.S. Army 2 days after being offered command of the Union Army. And 3 days after his native state of Virginia leaves the Union. And this is where he knew. I mean, he says, my loyalty was to Virginia, not to the United States. I was a traitor to the United States.
Uh-huh.
So I like that he accepts what he's doing.
Okay. He had purpose.
But I kind of like that both sides love him and wanted him. And you just wonder how different would it have been if he had accepted.
Right.
And his loyalty was more than to the state, but to the nation.
Yep.
All right, so Colonel Robert E. Lee resigns. On this day in 1914, ending a bitter coal miner strike at Ludlow, Colorado, Colorado militiamen attack and company men attack a tent colony of strikers, killing dozens of men, women, and children.
Ooh.
Union Busters, 1914.
Oh, yes, okay.
And again, I always have to give a plug. One of my favorite movies in the world, Matewan. John Sayles made it with credit cards. It was, I think, his first film.
Huh.
But he wrote a great book about it called Thinking in Pictures. It's about a coal mining strike in West Virginia in the same time period. And James Earl Jones is in it.
Oh, funny.
It's an amazing film.
Yeah. Okay.
Matewan. And it's kind of fair. It makes both sides. It shows.
You get an understanding.
Yeah. It's kind of fair that even the union guys are pretty bad to each other. And then the company guys are really bad. The only guy that's kind of a good guy is the local sheriff.
Oh.
And he was related to one of the Hatfield and McCoys.
Okay.
That feud. He was like a cousin. But he stands up to the union. He stands up to the owners of the company.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah. All right. So there's my film fact for the fun film fact for the day, even though it's not an Oregon film. 1999. This is just like filled with bad stuff today.
I know.
Yeah. Teen gunmen kill 13 at Columbine High School. And I was going to make that the history highlight of the day. We learned nothing from it.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it happens again and again and again. If that had been a watershed moment where we figured something out.
when it already happened at Springfield here in Oregon, just 1 year prior, I think.
I think so.
Yep.
But the thing I thought perhaps had more impact on history in our history highlight of the day, 1862, the first pasteurization test is completed by Frenchmen Louis Pasteur and Claude Bernard.
Well, we probably get less sick.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
As a population.
But,
so.
But I didn't do a deeper dive. Why is it called pasteurization and not like Bernardization? Claude.
Doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
Right.
But,
yeah.
But do you think pasteurization did back like, in the day?
Where did the word come from? What's its origins?
So poor Claude. I got to like do a deeper dive and find out what the deal is, why he got cut out.
Yeah.
He's probably the genius behind it. Louis probably didn't know anything.
Yes.
He was the marketing guy.
Or his wife, who was like, we need to figure something out.
Yeah.
But isn't it the marketing guy that always seems to get what they want?
It's true.
Gets the credit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Anyway, that is your highlight of the day, unless I missed something.
Nope. Those are the ones I remembered. And yeah, certainly Columbine had a huge effect and impact. Yeah. But you're right. We haven't quite learned what to do or how to solve this problem.
Well, we think we've come to understand that security is a big part of the big part of the equation. So, if you look at some of the more positive outcomes, you have a lot of schools being built with better security measures in place. I think those started to happen at a time where you had the older school buildings that were, you know, 1960s, 1970s designs that were just supposed to be really open. And so I think you really, you know, you take some lessons from it, but those lessons cost money and time to get those things enacted. So,
yeah.
Okay. He just stepped into being a great guest.
I know. It's like, oh.
Because he very politely just disagreed with me, saying that perhaps that should have been the history highlight of the day.
Yeah.
I like him.
And it's true. Yes. We could go down the path on this discussion that certainly more of this tragedy has been stopped or curbed.
Yeah.
But the fact that it still happens is just as distressful.
And actually, you make a great point, because how many have these steps in, you know, just even our local schools and across the country have prevented things that we never know might have happened.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Those little notes that you get from, or emails you get from the principals, saying, oh, well, we had an incident today. We're not going to talk about it, but we had an incident today that occurred and it was handled and I can think of a couple more recently, even within months, you know, that, where I've gotten one of those notes or, you know, my wife's, you know, she works for the school district in Seaside and just kind of, you know, said, yeah, hey, this thing happened and it was averted and, you know, it was handled, you know.
Wow. Sort of like historically the CIA, you only hear about them when we made mistakes.
When we make mistakes, that's true. Right, yes.
You don't know how many things they do really well.
That's true.
So, all right, that was a terrible segue. I can't think. But
we're just moving forward. Yeah. Yes, Darren Gooch here with Sunset Empire Parks and Rec. Yes. Also a Kiwanian.
Yep. I've been a Kiwanian. I was, as a matter of fact, I was doing a presentation to the Chamber of Commerce just a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about our club. We haven't really been to a chamber meeting or community meeting and really talked much about what our club is doing for a number of years. And so I went along my wife and I actually have been the advisors for the Kiwanis Builders Club for quite a few years now. We actually chartered that club back in, I want to say, 2010. Art Davidson, a longtime Kiwanian, wonderful man, talked me into it shortly after I started with the Kiwanis Club. That was in 2009. So I kind of got to reflecting at that meeting. I'm like, wow, has it really been like 17 years that I've been a Kiwanian?
Where does your life go?
Exactly.
So, what is the Builders Club? I don't know what this
is. So Kiwanis has these different offshoot clubs, depending on the age group of the people involved. So you have, you know, like Key Club in the high school. So a lot of people are probably really familiar with Key Club. For the middle school kids, they have the Kiwanis Builders Club. A lot of people ask me, like, oh yeah, what do you guys build? Park benches and stuff? Like, no, we don't.
We know future members.
Build things, because half these kids, I probably would not put a hammer or a saw in their hands, because not because I don't trust them, because they're a little squirrely at that age, right?
Middle schoolers.
But we build leadership skills. That's really what we're building. We're trying to teach these kids, you know, about community service, about giving your time, not really expecting something in return from that. So my wife Jennifer is the school advisor, the faculty advisor. I'm the club advisor because I'm a Kiwanian, so it kind of meshes together really well. Every Monday afternoon during the kids' lunch, we have our meeting. We only get about a half an hour of time in, but it's an opportunity to kind of, you know, have the kids do their committee work. They have a houselessness committee, a school climate and culture committee, beach cleanup committee, fundraising committee. So they have a number of committees. They break up. They you know, try to get something accomplished in about 20 minutes. But super proud of those kids. Actually, they really take ownership in their club. We have a really good, solid executive team. President, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. Just really, really proud of them. This year, this is probably the most exciting part. This year is the first year that they've participated in a program called Schnitzer Cares. I don't know if you're familiar with it. So they're one of only three middle schools in the state of Oregon that are actually participating in that program. And so the kids had to raise $750. Schnitzer Cares matched that with $7,500.
It's amazing.
And then every dollar after that they raised, Schnitzer Cares matched that with $10. So the kids continued to raise another $750, and they actually had accomplished that by the end of November, which, you know, in the grand scheme of fundraising is a pretty short time frame to raise $1,500. But they managed to do it. And so Schnitzer Cares gave them $15,000. So,
oh my goodness.
So the kids got about 12 grant applications from local nonprofits here and a couple out of Portland. They set to the process of going through all of those applications and ranking them and getting their top four. So then they organized the interviews. We sat through four interviews, and they made their decisions last week on how they were going to divvy up that funding. So it was really great to see that process. I kind of had my reservations at the beginning. I'm like, oh boy, how's this going to go? You know, like I mentioned, they can be a little squirrely. You know,
sure.
I go in and, you know, they're jumping off desks and they're being energetic middle schoolers but to see, you know, the kid that was, you know, only 10 minutes before was jumping off a desk, he sat in there and he's asking these really, really adult questions of the folks that were coming in to ask for money. So
I love that on so many levels, because, you know, all of our kids have participated in, you know, selling Girl Scout cookies, or mm-hmm. hey, my group wants to go on this trip, and this is philanthropy for philanthropy's sake.
Yes.
They're not getting anything except for the joy of helping whatever organization or cause that they're suddenly excited by. And I think that is just, it's going to create a lifelong caring about your community.
It is.
When you're doing something for yourself, there's a little bit of a selfish motive, but it's, you know, that's not a bad thing, but it's just, to me, these kids are just thinking, they're working on their own to raise the money to get the match. Mm-hmm. And then they've got this boatload of money. I mean, even for me today, that's a boatload of money.
Exactly.
And for them to, well, how am I going to spend this responsibly? What do I want to do with it? What do I want to change? What cause do I want to help here?
Who is it that I want to support? You know, I mean,
amazing.
They developed an entire mission statement, you know, right at the outset. And so a lot of their work was going, oh, well, we've got the mission statement over here, and then we've got this application over here. You know, how well does that align? you know, with what we set out to do, to just to watch that entire evaluation process take part in their heads was really amazing. I didn't learn anything about grant writing until probably about the time I started with the Park and Rec, you know, some 22, 23 years ago. And I had no idea what grants were all about, nice, to understand what that process was. And even trying to explain it to the middle schoolers, you know, before we started into this process, that you could still kind of see that blank look in their eyes. They're like, well, maybe I kind of get it. I don't know. You know, what is this all about? So yeah, having kids learn about that at such a young age, I think is amazing. We need more brilliant grant writers, to replace us as we.
Yeah. And real world skills of interviewing and, you know, collecting the information, reviewing the data. I mean, that's across the board.
Yeah.
So let's go back a little ways and tell us a little bit about you growing up. Where did you grow up and what were your interests?
I grew up in Salem, Oregon. So I'm a lifelong Oregonian, grew up in the Valley. I love to hunt and fish. That, you know, that was the kind of the thing in my family growing up.
Yeah, outdoors.
You either played sports, or you were the hunter and fisherman. My sister was the sports one. She was the softball player, the basketball player. You know, I trip over my own feet. Yeah. That really was
hopefully not
thing.
While you're hunting.
Yeah,
A couple of times actually. Interesting. I got a story about. I have a story about a puppy I had once that. We took out to teach how to hunt pheasants, but he was one of those that he didn't really want to be out there. He was under my feet the entire time. So tripping was part of that too. Hunting, fishing. We fish most of the lakes in Oregon, and that was kind of my thing. That was my dad time. So yeah.
And what were your interests? What were you looking towards doing? Were you drawn towards community service at that time? Were you thinking you were going to go into business?
I was the kid with no direction, like zero, like nothing.
Yeah.
Like I absolutely, when I left high school, I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do. I'd worked a lot with my grandfather. He was in construction. He was he built houses. He built every house in their neighborhood. He built his own house. He built a cousin's house next door, the cousins over here, the cousins that lived behind him. So I spent my summers actually working with my grandfather, nailing floors. We didn't actually have pneumatic tools at that time. Yeah. So you didn't have air guns, you know, hand nailing, and me and an old S-wing, a hammer and a 50-pound box of nails. So, so that's kind of a little bit about what I did after high school. I worked in construction a little bit. Later on, got to worked in retail for a period, and then after I met my wife, she's like, "Well, you know, maybe you should consider going back to school." And I said, "Well, that would be a really amazing thing." She's like, "You'd make a great teacher." And I was thinking, yeah, I would too. And she was going to school at the time. So I ended up, I ended up going back to school. I got my degree in language arts, or basically I was going to proceed and do another year and get my teaching degree. But as it turned out, you know, she had graduated with her master's already in teaching, and she got the job teaching in Seaside. So, so that summer we moved, and I started working actually part-time at the Park and Recreation District. I was teaching pottery classes and doing some after-school programming with middle schoolers. It was a new program at the time, After-School Rocks.
Oh, fun.
So I was working that program, but I was also working part-time up here in Astoria with a youth mentoring program, the Caring Adults Developing Youth Mentoring Program, which was a new program at that time. So that was my segue into the world of park and recreation.
Right. Well, and public service.
And public service. So,
So before you came here, had you ever visited Seaside?
Oh, yes. We used to come up just about every summer with my grandparents. We'd spend, kind of a long weekend up here in Seaside. And I was a reigning skee ball champion. Loved skee ball. You could play all day on an entire roll of dimes, right? Because it was only 10 cents back then.
Right.
I actually, my mom and I, we both love skee ball. And together, we ponied together our tickets, our coupons, and we got the entire set of Spuds McKenzie glasses. So that was amazing. Okay. Yeah.
He is just blowing through the great guest level.
So, yeah.
He's leveled up on the terms of our guests.
So, yeah. So, actually, so my sister-in-law, Zoe, you know very well, mm-hmm. Actually, we came up with her, too, during when she was doing her interview for Park and Rec with Mary Blake. So, yeah. So, it was... So did she
start at the same time then?
She started about 5 years before I did.
Okay.
Yeah, she started in 1998.
And we've had Zoe on the show.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah, as I started 5 years after her. But actually, she took a kind of a break for a while. So I've actually been there longer than she has.
Oh.
So she doesn't like to debate that. But
right. Because yeah. I think the break wasn't the break raising a child.
It's a good break.
Yeah, yeah. Not necessarily. Know.
So if I knew nothing about the parks, tell me about what you do and what's great about it.
And why we love Sunset Empire Parks and Rec.
Yeah, well, I'm currently the director of development. So it means I should be spending a lot of my time writing grants, but I also oversee the maintenance department and the IT department. So I spend a good amount of time helping those folks out in those two areas as well. So with my construction background, it sort of was a great segue to, you know, being part of the maintenance department. But I have actually done probably every single job at the Park and Rec over my tenure, with the exception of lifeguarding. I've never lifeguarded. Never had an interest of being in the pool. Somebody else can do that. But I've done fundamentally every other job there.
I was looking to see what your current role was, because I'm like, well, he's done this and he's done this and
it has morphed over time. It's one of those things, you know, you've got skills in lots of different areas, you know, suddenly somebody leaves and, well, we need one of these over here. And I'm like, well, I can do that.
And you're still small enough that you kind of do everything. So tell us, how has the district changed since you started? Because, I mean, property-wise alone, you've doubled in size.
We've doubled in size, yeah. I mean, it's exciting to watch all of this. I mean, there are a lot of people that have come and gone that I've missed over time, but they've been replaced by some really pretty amazing people. But just watching the growth, you know, I see what Zoe's doing with, you know, fitness programs and how those have morphed over time, but they've become better and better and better as time's kind of moved on. I've seen the aquatic fitness classes grow to the point now that I don't think you could really fit another body into that warm water pool during the aquatic fitness stuff. So just watching that growth been absolutely amazing. So,
and then to add childcare and
adding childcare, well, expanding
all
childcare.
The outside sports.
We've always had childcare, but you know, taking it from this little tiny room in here and now accommodating up to 30, 15 per classroom with the two classrooms and seeing up to 30 kids in there. Now the addition of the infant and toddler program, which has been pretty amazing. To see, it's one of those things too that parents really need.
Oh, yes.
That, right? You know, because like most of us, we have a job, we've got to work.
Yes.
So parents having access to that, and then you know you've got almost 50 kids in the after school zone. So that's it's just a lot more capacity now than we've ever had before. So.
And I know of one other program you're involved in. You may do more, but you are also a part of the South County Food Bank.
I am. I'm currently the board president. I have been for about 8 years now.
And this is another volunteer position. It's mm-hmm. a huge resource to an underserved population.
It is, and it's, you know, that occurred like a lot of things occur in boards. You know, you join a board and they're like, well, you know, we need a vice president.
Well, okay, that's how we trick you into it.
I know, it sounds so easy.
That is. So they're like, yeah, we need a vice president. No, it's an easy job. All you got to do is just you know, run the meeting when so and so is not here. And I'm like, oh, well, I think I can do that. Yeah, for sure. And I spent a lot of time on other boards, so I know all about how boards operate. But it was about the inside of about a year that that the president stepped down and said, no, I can't do this anymore. So everybody looked over at me and said, well, you get to slide over one seat. And I went, oh, great, thank you. I can do that. It was a little bit of a turbulent time for the food bank. We were not doing so well with our fundraising, so we're a little behind on money. We still have money on our property, where we're currently at, and it was a little bit of a challenge. But you know, we as a board rose to the challenge, and I remember I was working at the pantry one afternoon, and one of our board members, our secretary, she was working the front desk, and she came up and she said, am I reading this right? And she put a check in front of my face. Somebody had come in and dropped off a $70,000 check. So that really couldn't have come at a better time for us.
Doesn't that just warm your heart that somebody cares enough to do that?
Basically it was somebody who'd left a bequest to the pantry and had passed on, and so they were bringing the check to us. So since then we'd had one other bequest that allowed us to put some money into a CD and, you know, start to kind of build something that was going to provide some money for us
and stability.
Yeah. And there's just the generosity of our community too. You know, you look back at what was going on last fall with the government shutdown and everything was happening there. I'm telling, you know, staff, I'm like, you know, purchase, you know, we need more peanut butter. We need more cereal. We need more of these things. Let's do this. But the community came out in a really big way, and they were dropping off money. They were dropping off donations, and it was amazing. So I actually have just a little bit of data here.
That's what I was going to ask. I would never expect the president necessarily, but what is the impact? I assume it's huge.
Well, last year, total food that went through our food pantry, 234,348 pounds of food. So an absolutely immense amount of food, about 20,000 pounds more than the year before. So
interesting.
I think most of that came in last fall.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as that need was really high and people were really nervous.
Very, very nervous. Yeah. People didn't really know what to expect. Sure. You know, is this thing going to reopen soon? Are we going to get our SNAP benefits? So yeah, a lot of that was happening at the time. And so I'm happy to say that just kind of passed through, and we sat on a lot of peanut butter for a little while, but not for very long.
It has a good shelf life.
Peanut butter goes super fast. So
tell us a little bit, as we wrap up here, what is it that keeps you and your family here? Why do you continue to choose to stay at the same job or same organization, not the same job, and stay in Seaside?
I love the community. Just, you know, you get to participate in this community in a way that you don't necessarily in a larger city or urban area. And I think that's what makes little, you know, small towns like ours so amazing. You can participate, you know, you can change lives in a big way.
That's a great soundbite to end on.
I was just thinking, oh my gosh, I wish we had like the Oscars or something.
Yes.
That's the clip.
Okay,
right
so
there.
Great guest. Thank you so much again, Darren Gooch, for joining us. We sure appreciate your time, your energy, and your service to our community. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Go make some history, and we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.